You've got ants inside the house, mosquitoes outside the house, moles burrowing in your lawn, and termites eating your house from inside out. You're completely surrounded! Luckily, OPC Pest Services has a Four Seasons program that can help. OPC has been providing quality pest services since 1972. Protect your home and property and call OPC Pest Services for a free estimate at 969-9635 or visit opcpest.com. Again, that's 969-9635 or visit opcpest.com.
With UPS, Future You gets seriously pumped. As a package handler, you'll have a great job this season. Make up to $20 per hour after bonuses for a 25-hour work week. Future You goes further than you imagine. Find out what you'll become at upsjobs.com.
Locked on the V Show with Bob Valvano on ESPN 680 and 105.7. Now here's Bobby V.
So thanks to the good folks here at Caesars for giving us the hard line now. We have a fine hard line, dedicated line, and now we are no delay. We're not worried about dropping. So those of you on the wireless who had the over-under for drops at 3, the over-winner today, but now that we are hardwired, we're in good shape, so we thank you for taking care of that, and Andrew for coming by. Andy took care of running around and getting that done, so we're rock solid now, so happy to be with you. So now, twice I tried to get into the analysis of the game last night, and both times was dropped. So now you're stuck with my analysis because I'm not dropping. Don't do that. Stuck like that. Although I think it's good. And I'll tell you why I think it's good, because it's not just me yammering, although hopefully I would bring more to it than just a yammer, but it's based on my conversation with Chris Mack, which was there's a couple of things that went on last night that were really good, I think. I started to say, for the people who were upset about the first half, you know, oh, my goodness. And I understand. Larry O'Bannon just sent a tweet out, and he said, I just, you know, you get worried when you get a team that you are better than. The longer you let them hang around, the harder it gets. He's absolutely right about that. And it was looking like one of those games for a while, and Chris was concerned, and if you're a fan, you were concerned. But the only thing that I was struck by was it hadn't yet reached what I call the moment of truth, only because, not because I'm just always trying to look at the bright side or blah, 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 but because you could put your finger on why the game was the way it was. The 3 points that I said were important at the beginning of the game were they had to be able to not make live ball turnovers, because if they made live ball turnovers, then Boston College was going to get easy shots. They're among the top 30 teams in the country in steals, so they couldn't make live ball turnovers. They had to dominate the backboards, and they had to make sure they kept an eye on Heath, because when he has had 15 or more points, they've won. They did none of those things in the first half, none of them. BC outscored them, I think it was 12-0 in points off turnovers. They had all the second chance points. They had 7. Louisville had none. They were getting outscored by 19 in the 2 points of emphasis. And, oh, by the way, they also let Heath go for 3 threes and 11 first half points. And I was like, well, what the hell? It's not like, gee, what's going on here? That's what was going on here. Now you say to yourself, okay, that's what was happening. Now you got to ask yourself, why was it happening? And that's where the answer lied in turning the game around. And you know, like I said, I started to say last hour, I never know what anybody heard because we dropped. We're not dropping now, though. Yeah, pretty excited about that. What I said was that, you know, I didn't have a chance to see Boston College. I hadn't seen them. I was not assigned any of their games, so I really hadn't a chance to see them. Even on TV, I probably could have made an excuse to watch them, but they haven't been on much, and so I didn't see them. I went by stats and data and information like that, and that's fine. But the fact of the matter is, they came out, and I said to Paul on the broadcast, my God, they are playing so fast. I don't mean fast going from backcourt to frontcourt. I'm talking about when they got in the half court, guys were coming off screens on a dead sprint. I mean, they were coming around the screen at full speed, catching a pass in full speed like it was a football game. We're hitting a receiver in stride, and he's going to go busted for a touchdown. And they would come off that screen with that kind of speed, and they were half a step ahead of Louisville in so many ways. They came off that screen, then they had the defense misshape it a little bit, so the guy put it to the floor, and he'd get in the lane and drive. Or he would drive, and the guy now who's coming to help had to come from a greater distance because he was not really where he needed to be. And so they would kick it out of that, and then that guy would kick it to, like I said, the next guy, and he'd get a wide-open look, and they were making the shots they had. And so Chris said to me after the game, he said they didn't do any of that on the film. So you give them credit. They saw something in the pack line, the way Louisville plays the pack line, and they said, you know what, if we sprint off screens, maybe we can make it so that that defense gets out of shape. And when it gets out of shape, as Chris himself will tell you, it's not easy to defend to play it very well. So that was a good bit of strategy. It's what scouting does. It's why you scout. It's why you break down film. Now, there's two things that happened. At halftime, Chris told me they didn't talk anything about offense because their offense ultimately was doing fine. So that's the thing. You look at it, wasn't Louisville ahead by three at the half? Despite all of that crap that was going on, Louisville was still ahead by three. So you say to yourself, all right, well, listen, are these things we're not capable of doing? Of course they're not. Louisville out-rebounds their opponents by whatever it is, 6-7 a game, and Boston College gets out-rebounded by...
They were up two, but point taken.
All right, so they were up. Louisville was ahead despite all of that. And Boston College gets out-rebounded by a few rebounds a game, and Louisville out-rebounds their opponents by like six. Anyway, when you put the two of them together, Louisville should have had an 11 advantage on the backboard. And they had none in terms of second-chance points. Zero. I think they might have had one more rebound in general, but that doesn't tell the story because Boston College had put 12 second-chance points on the board. So what they talked about at halftime was, hey, we got to get to the glass and start making some hay doing what we do and get that front court to light a fire in there. And they did that. And then we got to take care of the ball better. They had, like, whatever it was, 10 first-half turnovers. They only made three in the second half. And now you take away those live ball turnovers and easy shots for BC, you get your defense much more effective. So they talked about that, and they did a better job on Heath, for that matter, as well. In the second half, he wasn't nearly as effective. So the second half, you saw Sutton come out. They had, in the whole first half, they had 5 points in the paint the whole first half, and they had 6 paint points after the first media timeout in the second half. What does that tell you? It tells you that the inside guys went to work. They had no second-chance points at all in the first half. By the end of the game, that stat was even, I believe. They made up a 12-point difference in a 12-point difference in second-chance points. They had 7 points off turnovers. Louisville had none. By the end of the game, that was even. So that's the thing. And you say, okay, well, how'd they do it? You know, some of it was just focus. They got concentration. They got some rebounding. You know, you see guys, you talk about the things that people bring to the table. Sam Williamson, when he comes in, man, he's like a thinner version of Sutton. He rebounds like a maniac. He comes from everywhere, and he's getting a hand on the ball. He's slapping the ball around, keeping it alive, getting you a chance to make that pinball rebound. That was a big, big factor. Not to mention the guys who were the frontline guys stepped up their game. And then the other thing is they just simply did a better job taking care of the ball. So now they took away the easy shots, and then, much to my delight, because I understand if you don't want to play as a steady diet, but I think it's a great change of pace, they went to zone. And man, oh man, if you're trying to play a million miles an hour and now you've got to be analytical and try and pick spots in the zone, it's not that easy to change your whole mindset. And they started to force passes. They made turnovers. And to Louisville's credit, they played it well. The guards, considering they've had very little time playing it in game situations, the guards were doing a terrific job. It looks like a 1-1-3, but all it is the guy at the top this way, he can challenge the ball a little bit further up, so they can't just bring the ball unopposed inside the three-point arc and then kind of get you on your heels. You know, he pushes it one way, and whichever way he pushes it, he stays on the ball. The other guard goes the other way, and then from there, it's basically relatively the same as any other 2-3. But how you start it gets you into a little bit of putting some pressure on the basketball. And they got steals. Now, Louisville got live ball turnovers. Louisville got steals, and they turned those into buckets and runouts and dunks, and the whole game flipped. And they won convincingly. And the point I'm making is that's all part of the game. I'm not dismissing the fact that they were playing a team that is not as talented as they are overall, and they were making some mistakes. They made so many turnovers in the first half. Yes, Larry O'Bannon's point is you let a team like that hang around, the longer the game goes, the more they believe. But the question is, did you get a chance to make your adjustments? Because I'll be honest with you, I've been in those games. You go to that zone, and all of a sudden a team who was going a million miles an hour on offense, they're able to calm themselves, and they throw it to the high post, and they kick it to the wing, and that guy hits a three, and then you start saying, well, maybe he's not going to be our night. So I understand if there was alarm, but until that happened, even when they scored the first couple, the first three possessions, I think Louisville got one true stop, and Boston College scored twice, but they weren't clean scores. There was one that was a miss, and it was a crazy, stupid rebound that Rickett pinballed around, and the guy scored. The other one was the first time they played it, and Louisville did not go to the boards, and the guy got a stick back. But I was like, you know what? This has really slowed them down, though. It's really confused them, and I was hoping he'd stay with it, and they did, and then the avalanche came. They started getting steals at the guard spot. The guards were working in a tandem very well. The inside guys were working, and I like that. The thing I don't, you know, I can't say I don't like, but makes it tough for me sometimes to put the pack line, is they're so concerned about not being out of shape, not getting the defense out of shape. I'm not talking about conditioning. I'm talking about bending and shaping the defense, that they don't chart deflections. He wants them concerned about you stay in position. And the big picture, that is a good way to do it. But when the other guy's got all the momentum, every once in a while you got to do something to just change the game. And they don't really do that. They did when they went to the zone, and they did when they were able to start getting some offensive rebounds too, of course. But the zone definitely jolted the game, and I like that. And it jolted it in a way where they got some steals, they got some easy buckets, and they wound up fine. They won by, what did they win by? How many of them were 17, was it? I don't know, but it was a pretty big margin. And, you know, that to me, maybe it's because, as I started to say earlier, when you come from a pro background, I mean obviously me, I'm talking about the market I was in, you know, the games come so fast that you're just looking at the big picture of games, the cluster of games. Well, that was a great road trip. That was a great week. That was, you know, here you don't play for three or four more days. We break everything down microscopically. Well, that wasn't a good 10 minutes. Yeah, but how'd the game turn out? You know, the game turned out really well. And I it's the same thing. Fans see their team, unfortunately, like coaches do. They see the warts. They don't always appreciate the other stuff. No team's perfect, but you look at the whole 40 minutes. And you know, I could do a segment. I won't do it. Nick would love it, probably. But, you know, why your team sucks. Because I could go around the whole country last night. Even everybody that won, I can make a case for, you know, well, why this team sucks. I mean, Kentucky had a hard time with a Vanderbilt team that hasn't won a conference game in forever. They won. They handled them easily in the second half, but first half not so good. There was another couple of stats up there. Oh, you know, everybody's got a problem in a game. Indiana, you know, had gotten some momentum, and that was the worst loss I think they've ever had to Penn State. But, you know, I could easily come up with a reason Penn State sucks. Everybody has some reason they suck. Because why? Everybody's getting peanuts this year in college basketball. So, you know, I'm trying to not, but obviously you're not alone. Believe me, I'm not telling you what to believe. Think what you want. But Louisville 18-1 is a longer shot to win the national championship than Dayton, San Diego State, Michigan State, and Baylor. I saw Baylor. Now they're legit. But I mean, what do they want them to do? They're not. Meeting the fans' eyeball test. I mean, he's brought them along. Every game I look at something tangible that I say they've gotten better at. They've developed their freshmen. They brought them along carefully, slowly. They didn't drown them. And now they're both playing with the ones that play the most minutes, obviously, in Sam. And as Paul says, you older listeners will remember Sam and Dave. Paul was, you know, Sam and Dave. You got Samuel Williamson and David Johnson, and Sam and Dave were kind of who the Blues Brothers were based after. That's their music they were singing. But they had no idea. The kids had no idea who Sam and Dave was. But even Chris Mack didn't know who Sam and Dave was. Seriously, come on. Got to know your music here. But the point is, those guys are, you know, have really come along and are playing now at a higher and higher level. That's a great thing. They're able to make in-game adjustments that I'm not sure they were able to do earlier in the year. We saw they can win when Jordan goes out of his mind like he did yesterday, or frankly when he has struggled a little bit. He only averaged 13 points a game in the win streak leading up to this game, but that's because I think he said it himself. I read the comments today in the paper where he said, look, I'm not, I could go get 20 a night, I think, if that's my only goal. But our goal is, how are we going to win games? So now they can win, you know, with other guys who can beat you. So that's that. And like I said, for all the angst of things like last night's first half, they won again on the road. They have not lost a road conference game yet in the ACC. That's, you know, you can say, well, the ACC's, they're one of the reasons why the numbers are skewed for the road teams. So you can't say, well, that's not as hard to win on the road. It's hard to win on the road. They are skewing the numbers with their success. So there's a lot of things to hang your hat on and feel good about. I don't think there's any question about that. But, I understand that if frankly, they go to that zone and BC comes back and goes bang, 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 hits three threes, it might be a completely different game. But, you know, you got to commit to something you think the time was right for, and the time was right for that. I thought they played it very well. We'll take a short break. We'll come back. We're here at Caesars. We are delighted to be here. If you've not seen what they've done with this place, you should come check it out. It's fantastic. The sports book is magnificent as well. We're going to take a little bit of a break. I am, as I said, fighting a little under the weather, so I've got to go do a little maintenance here. So, Nick, I know Zach Osterman is coming up, but give me a few minutes because we have some medications and some other things we got to do so I don't just go completely off the rails here. So we'll be back as we go on here from Caesars. Thank you for being with us on this Thursday on ESPN 680 1057.
Listening to The V Show with Bob Valvano on ESPN 680 and 105.7.
Thanks for your patience. I do apologize, as I said. Well, first of all, delighted to be here at Caesars. If you haven't checked it out, you really need to get out here. Sportsbook, fantastic. And the casino itself, I had no idea with the amount of renovations they did here. Just fantastic. You walk right into the parking lot, you're in the casino. It's all shiny, sparkly new. And the sportsbook is terrific. So come check them out, and you will have a good time. I promise you that. But I'm a little bit under the weather, and I apologize to you for that. But we got in at 4 in the morning, and I'm trying to muddle through here. I don't start growling at you with that really raspy Babe Ruth on his last visit to Yankee Stadium voice. I'm not making light of that. He had throat cancer. But anyway, I digress. Victor Oladipo came back to play for the Pacers last night, and very emotional night. I mean, basketball fans are already, their emotions are a little frayed over the Kobe Bryant thing. And Oladipo, who actually referenced Kobe quite a bit, finished with 9 points, played 21 minutes, but he hadn't played in an NBA game since January 23rd, 2019. That is a long, long, long time off. And he got very emotional. And Zach Osterman, who's been nice enough to join us frequently from Indianapolis, joins us to talk about it. Zach, I mean, I may sound like an insensitive question, but I think I got to ask it. I mean, it was very moving. He got all choked up. Was some of it related to the fact that it came right on the heels of Kobe, or would this have been that dramatic anyway just because of the gruesomeness of the injury from which he had to come back?
You know, I would presume probably a little bit of both. I think at least as I think back on what of Victor Oladipo's career I covered, which goes back to his time in high school, I think at one point in high school he may have had a broken foot or a broken arm, something like that. But I don't think he's really ever had, you know, an injury that serious, and an injury where it was kind of the rare injury, too, that we don't have a sort of tried and true solution for, right? If you know what I mean. Like, even if you blow out your ACL these days, obviously that's impactful. You're going to miss a lot of time. You're going to have to be diligent about your rehab, but there's a pretty clear route forward. You know, we know how to fix that kind of stuff. But his injury was you know, even different from that, and maybe was one of the few that still throws up that level of uncertainty. And so I think you get, you know, I think that there's a lot of different sort of angles to the Kobe Bryant conversation for someone of Victor Oladipo's age who, you know, even more so maybe for him than for me, even before Victor Oladipo was ever a great basketball player or had the fame and the notoriety, Kobe Bryant was his version of Michael Jordan. But I think there's also probably a personal element for Victor as well, that just, you know, having to face the uncertainty of that much time off.
Yeah, no, I'm sure. And he got a warm reception. He was very gracious. We'll hear his comments a little bit later. But let me shift gears back to the college game. Of course, Zach Osterman, who's been nice enough to join us a number of times before, covers IU athletics and college sports for the Indy Star and other things. And we're glad to pick his brain about the Victor Oladipo story. But this has been a wild year in college basketball. And, Zach, I'd love to know your thoughts, because I see some things, like I'm here in the sports book and I'm looking at some of the odds on some of these teams to win the national championship or go to the Final Four. And all I could say is I've never seen a number of these teams. So much of it, I guess, especially in January, from the quote-unquote betting public, is based on reputation. Is that a brand name? Is that, you know, a team that's done it before? And of all years, like a year, you better do away with that, because Indiana just lost to Penn State. Worst loss, I guess, they've ever had to Penn State. And Rutgers looks like they're for real. So when you look at that, how much do you think we're shortchanging some of the non-brand names when we assess the big picture for this year's college basketball?
I think maybe more what's happening, at least, you know, kind of in my own experience, is people just aren't really figuring out how to process what they're seeing around college basketball. So what do you make of, for example, a North Carolina team that is struggling this much? What do you make of a Kentucky team that's got some good wins and at times looks like vintage Kentucky, but also has three or four pretty bad losses? What do you make of a Big Ten where it feels like nobody's elite, but the league could put 11 teams in the field? What do you make out of an SEC that might not get, or excuse me, an ACC that might not get four teams in the field? And so when that happens, when you get a chaos year, I'm not saying people just kind of throw their hands up and give up, but I think what can happen a little bit is you almost get into a situation where people just, they lose every point of reference to be able to say, okay, well, how good is Rutgers? How good is Penn State? Well, normally, if they were good, they'd be as good as this team, but this team's terrible. You know, what am I supposed to make of this team when they're this bad? I just think that there are so few sort of points of reference, so few mile markers, if you want to say that, in college basketball this season, that I think it's hard to find the proper perspective when you're trying basically to say, okay, we have these unbelievably unexpected seasons from everybody, from Penn State to Rutgers to Illinois, and hey, that's just in the Big Ten. You know, let's go elsewhere. Let's go and look at Baylor. Let's go and look at Butler. Seton Hall is tearing things up, but Villanova can't seem to consistently keep it together at times. I just think we've lost all sort of points of reference, and it's leaving everybody just sort of scratching their heads.
I brought that up. Excuse me. I brought that up because seemed to be a good segue to what you wrote about. People can find it if they go to the Indy Star website, or you can find it on Twitter as well. How did proud IU basketball fall so far, and can it get back to the top? And that's the question. I mean, has it really fallen that far? Are you speaking? I mean, because, you know, the fans always think, like, Louisville played a bad first half, and fans think, you know, the sky's falling, and that's how fans are wired. I thought when Archie got the job, you know, made some headway in recruiting, and I thought they were primed to go forward. But do you think they are still, I mean, behind who? The glory days? I'm not sure. UCLA's not going to get back to their glory days. Is it just a matter of the landscape's changed, or they really are still trying to fix things from a whole bunch of things that you allude to in the article about the problems they've had? Where do you see them, in other words, in that timeline?
Yeah, it's funny. I wrote that. I wrote it kind of steadily and just sort of methodically over the course of last summer and fall. And it was our, you know, we always prepare a big story to drop at the beginning of the basketball season for obvious reasons. And that was the one I wrote. And basically what I was almost trying to do was figure out what happened to Indiana over about a 15-year period from the end of the last really elite-level Bob Knight cycle, you know, 92, 93, 94 with Cheney and Bailey and Henderson and Brian Evans and those people, all the way through about to Tom Crean's hiring, and trying to get at the idea that what's really happened to Indiana basketball is as much over the last 20 to 25 years an institutional failing as it is the failing of any one coach or coaching staff. There have been a string of bad decisions made, disengagement administratively in different situations. Obviously, there have been bad hires, Kelvin Sampson, you know, being a pretty clear example of that. There have been some really sort of system shock moments, Bob Knight's firing being a great example of that. But just this idea that when Tom Crean was grappling with some of these problems, and certainly this is starting to happen to Archie Miller as well, people would want to see those problems through the lens of the idea that the coach took over a program with an absolutely blank slate, and that he didn't take over a program that was still trying to find its way out of a lot of years of mismanagement. And I think it was really only about probably the end of Rick Greenspan's tenure as athletics director in 2007, 2008, the Sampson hire notwithstanding, when Indiana started to get the money to be competitive again in facilities, in budgets, in resources, in coach hiring, in assistant coach hiring. But then at the same time, you had a lot of conflicting reports over whether or not Sampson was actually Rick Greenspan's first choice for that hire, or whether he was overruled by people above him. You've had complaints at times from basically that IU's administration just isn't necessarily hostile to basketball, but just doesn't invest in it in the way that it should when you consider what IU basketball is, which is the most prominent forward-facing element of Indiana University that exists. And it doesn't mean that you have to be all about sports. It doesn't mean that you have to surrender your academic mission, but it does mean that you need to recognize the value of what you've got in front of you. And I think there have been times when people have felt that that's not happened. That's not been the case for IU administratively. And it's really probably only been through the last 10 years and through the work both of Fred Glass, who obviously will retire at the end of this academic year, Tom Crean, and now Archie Miller, that Indiana at least has gotten its feet steadied underneath it from a facilities perspective, a resources perspective, an infrastructure perspective. And now maybe you can just start having conversations about whether or not it's just about basketball. But it was trying to sort of put into context how mismanaged Indiana basketball was up until about 2009 as a brand, as a product, as a program, and just how much of that, how many of those mistakes Indiana has essentially just been fighting to undo in the time since.
October, but it leads to right now. Archie talked about they didn't play well against Penn State. That happens. Great teams, good teams, mediocre teams have nights that are better than others. It wasn't a good night for them. But so if you're going to follow up with that article, you have to ask the question then, all right, so the things Archie controls, has this year to this point progressed the program where you say, all right, I understand he had to overcome some things. You said Tom Crean helped overcome some, but those are some of them were, you know, facilities and things like that. How about the development of this team and the people getting confidence that he's the coach that can win big there? Has this year done anything to fuel that fire, to put that fire out? They're right in the middle of a very, very good league. They're 5-5. They're 15-6. They're right in the middle. So what do you make of it then?
Yeah, this does get a little bit, and I understand why fans get frustrated about a night like Wednesday night. Listen, that was an ugly game, and they played an ugly game at Rutgers, and they played an ugly game at Maryland, and unless, you know, they do keep evolving, they're probably not going to win a Big Ten road game of consequence this season. That does not mean they're not going to the tournament. That does not mean they've not taken steps forward. You know, I mean, I had somebody ask me just the other day. They said, how is Indiana significantly better right now than it was in Archie Miller's first season? And I said, well, number one, they haven't lost to Indiana State or Fort Wayne at home by double digits. Number two, they are one win away from Archie's win total in year one. Number three, they're on track for a comfortable NCAA tournament berth. I guess that without wanting to be sort of overly aggressive about it, what I would say to people is, when you looked at it, Indiana was picked anywhere from like 7th to I think about 11th in the Big Ten in the preseason. There was there were a wide range of opinions, but everybody generally said, there's some tools here, there's some pieces. It's not often that a team gets better for losing its top two scorers and rebounders, which obviously Indiana did in Juwan Morgan and Romeo Langford. But if they can buy in defensively and make the most of their depth, they should have a chance. And then it'll come down to what they do at home and what the Big Ten looks like. And so, you know, sort of the question I want to ask is, what did people expect? Right. If you said they're 15-6, they're dead in the middle of the conference, they're about where they probably would have been last year had the bottom of the tub not fallen out through injuries. Maybe a little bit behind that, but last year they also had Romeo Langford and Juwan Morgan.
Right.
And so you had more top-end talent. They're on course to make the NCAA tournament comfortably. They have a fistful of good wins. They have no bad losses, and in all likelihood cannot add any bad losses between now and the end of the regular season. You know, is it the progress that people want? Is it the progress that Archie Miller would have hoped for if you could have sat down with him and asked him to roadmap for you in his first month on the job where he'd be by year three? Maybe not. I don't know. But it's certainly progress. And so then you get the question of, as Archie keeps rolling this roster over and bringing in more and more of his players, because without wanting to pick on some of the upperclassmen, it does feel like the more consistent performers on this team right now, most nights, are the guys that this staff has brought in.
Right.
That's when you start to say, okay, do we continue to see progress? Because if year three is about making the tournament, getting into the tournament, getting that signpost, reaching that mile marker, well, then you got to get to the next one the year after that and the next one the year after that. And if in year five we're still having this exact same conversation, then yeah, then at that point you ask some really hard questions of Archie Miller. But right now, yes, I do see progress, frankly.
And I tend to people say, well, you coach, you want to be a coach apologist. But I think the guy works very hard. I think he's a good teacher of the game. And I think last year, I mean, they wanted him to recruit. He got Romeo Langford. I'm not sure that was a blessing or a curse in the hindsight, because people's expectations went through the roof. And I don't know why that didn't really work out, but it didn't really work out. And so because of that, you know how that is, Zach, people are doubly disappointed. When they think things are going to be great and then they're not great, they're even more pissed off. And so the question about that is then, how much has that affected Archie? If I were to ask you on a scale of 1 to 10 for fitting in, I mean, and I don't think any coach fits in at a 10. Seriously, I'm not sure Krzyzewski fits in at a 10. There's always somebody who wants to, you know, thinks, we need a new guy here. But if one were a guy who absolutely is the wrong place in the wrong time and 10 is a beloved figure, where do you think he is right now?
I don't know. That's a really good question. I mean, 6, 7? I mean, okay. I think there's different grades to it. I mean, listen, I think if we could somehow scientifically poll, you know, Indiana fans, and not just the sort of the Twitter echo chamber, but a genuine group of IU fans, I think he'd still have probably a net positive approval rating. I think that obviously fluctuates a lot game to game. And something I even said on my podcast today is, maybe part of the problem with IU basketball right now is that it's not healthy or reasonable for every single result to be a referendum on the state of and direction of IU basketball. Like, you can't look at Penn State and say, oh my God, nothing's working, it's over, burn it all down.
Right.
You know, it just, when you do that game to game, you're never going to get anywhere. The analogy I made is, if you get mad and throw your remote through the TV every single time something bad happens, you're going to run out of money real fast.
That's how I see it.
I do think there are elements. I mean, listen, his style of basketball is a hit here when it works. You know, the defense first, the ruggedness, the toughness, the rebounding, getting into transition and scoring that way. His personality, I think, fits this place in the sense that he's pretty thick-skinned, and this is a tougher job than a Duke or a Villanova or a Louisville, because you can't really get lost. You live in a town of 85,000 people. You're an hour from Indianapolis. You're 4 hours from Chicago. Anywhere you go, people know who you are. Anything you do, your public profile is going to follow you everywhere. And so I think he's good for Indiana in that respect. it's still kind of to be seen whether or not he can get the program to a place where it's recruiting the kind of players that really change the game for you at the top end of the sport. He got Romeo Langford, and he's gotten Trace Jackson Davis. You need eventually, I think, to be able to get a couple more of those players in, you know, at any given time. And to your point, you know, you always knew Romeo was going to be around for a year. Nobody begrudged Romeo Langford leaving after one season. Of course, everyone understood. But you do need to get to a place where instead of saying, well, we get a McDonald's All-American just about every year, you might need two or three. And you don't have to be Kentucky bringing in six, seven guys every season, but over the course of a four-year cycle, you might need two or three of those All-American-type high school players on your roster to win at the level that people expect around here. But he's also done something that is both very popular and so far has paid off very well for him, which is recruit really, really well in state. You look at some of his best performers in the last two seasons, Langford, obviously. Robert Finnessy, who's probably this team's most important player as its point guard, even though he's a sophomore and he's been playing hurt the whole year. Mm-hmm. Trace Jackson Davis. You see the promise in somebody like Armand Franklin. You know, even some of your bench role player type guys are at least able to fill some spots, and you've got a couple more in-state guys coming in 2020. That's something that Indiana fans say they want as much as anything else out of a coach very often. And so I think I would say there's still a lot of ways in which it fits. But I do think that there are some areas, some significant areas, where Archie Miller needs to kind of improve as time goes on. But I also say this many times, you know, Tom Crean used to get criticized for his sideline demeanor. Yeah. And, you know, he was so energetic. He was so passionate, whatever. And then Kevin Wilson, Indiana's old football coach, would get criticized when he wasn't, when he was just kind of steady Eddie. Didn't yell at the refs a lot, didn't go crazy. People say, why is he not showing emotion? Then they replace him with Tom Allen, who's all emotion and energy all the time, and he's not going to bowl games, and suddenly it's, oh, my God, he's out of control over there. Look at him. Then he goes 8-4, and Tom Crean, you know, loses in the NIT, and Tom Allen's energy and passion are great, and Tom Crean's energy and passion are destructive. And really it all just comes down to, do you win, lose, or not? Because Kirk Ferentz often looks like the most – you know, stone-faced guy in the world on the sideline at Iowa. And if he wins 9 games a year, the approach works fine. The behavior's fine. It's just about whether or not you can get those wins and losses.
As always, Zach, good stuff. Thank you so much for being with us. Happy Super Bowl to you. Quick, you making a pick? Who are you picking?
You know, I as an Atlanta Falcons fan, the Super Bowl is still a very painful experience to me.
I'll buy that.
I guess I'll go with the Chiefs. I know Andy Reid's history in big games isn't always great, but I think there's more dynamism there, and I just don't know if I can handle Kyle Shanahan. I have nothing against the man personally, but I just don't know if I can deal with the slew of 28-3 think pieces that will flood the internet Monday morning if Kyle Shanahan wins the Super Bowl. At least this soon after 51, so I'll go with the Chiefs.
All right, man. Good talking to you, Zach. Thanks. Take care of yourself.
Absolutely. Good talk to you, too.
All right. Zach Osterman joining us, talking about Victor Oladipo and IU basketball, and I know, making a quick Super Bowl pick as well. We'll take a short time out. We're here at Caesars, and you should come see us. It's a wonderful, wonderful place. I just can't say enough about what a job they did here. The casino itself is... If you've ever been here, and you used to come up that parking garage, and you get in, and then you had to turn the corner and make that long, long walk back to where the boat was. Well, the boat is still here, but they don't use it. That's where the casino is now. So you come around the corner, and boom, you open the door, you're in the casino. It's unbelievable. You come out of from the parking lot to the casino floor itself is like 50 feet. It's unbelievable. Then you walk to the back, and the sports book is back here, and it's just a great place there. I mean, they've these three movie screen-sized televisions right now. There's... Golf Channel's watching Jordan Spieth on the practice ranges. He's getting ready for his Thursday round on the pro team. And lots and lots of other things on various other TVs around the building as well. So if you love sports, you'll love the fact that you can go bet at the kiosk over there. There's a million bets. Couldn't be simpler. If you say, I like to deal with a person, well, there's two guys behind the counter right there. I'd be more than happy to help you through. And if you've never bet sports, I had somebody say, I like to do it, but I'm a little intimidated. All the bets are numbered. So they even have a little sheet here, how to place a sports bet. So let's say the game was, the home team in this case, was laying 2.5 points. They were 2.5 point favorites. Yeah, and the number of that game is 312. You'd say, I'd like to place a bet for number 312, minus 2.5, for whatever the bet is, $50, $10, $100, whatever you want. So you start your bet by choose the bet number. That tells them the game. You confirm the choice of the team. You decide what type, point spread, money line, point total, the amount. And then you confirm that it's right, and off you go. So it couldn't be simpler. And makes watching the games a lot of fun, I'll promise you that. As we roll on here on this Thursday edition, and thanks to the folks at Caesars for putting this together. Dan Bonner is going to join us. We'll get his thoughts on the Cards last night as well and what's going on in the ACC. So always good to talk with him. That's coming up here on ESPN 680-1057.
UPS is currently hiring package handlers for its preload operation. Earn $13 an hour and receive up to $250 in weekly attendance bonuses while working up to a career as a package car driver. In as little as 6 months, you could have an opportunity to connect with customers and build lasting relationships in the community. Future you looks good in brown. Apply now at upsjobs.com or text brown to 33588. That's brown to 33588.
You've got ants inside the house, mosquitoes outside the house, moles burrowing in your lawn, and termites eating your house from inside out. You're completely surrounded. Luckily, OPC Pest Services has a Four Seasons program that can help. OPC has been providing quality pest services since 1972. Protect your home and property and call OPC Pest Services for a free estimate at 969-9635 or visit opcpest.com. Again, that's 969-9635 or visit opcpest.com.